to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Johnny, we're sorry. Won't you come on home? We're worried. Won't you come on? What is wrong in my life? I must get drunk every night. Johnny.
We're back at the races, 22 into hour two. Tom Bush will join us after we talk to Johnny, but right now, XB Johnny D, good morning.
Stevie, how are you this morning?
Okay, getting some momentum here from a busy and pretty interesting weekend.
It was an enjoyable weekend. Saturday's car at Gulfstream was, it was fantastic, and that's kind of the way. I want to say, we used to have those cards more often throughout the country. And we don't have them quite as often now, so I don't know. Maybe when they come up, we are that much more involved. I know Gulfstream set a handle record of 36 million, topped the 31 million from the previous year. So that shows you that when you have cards that interest players, kind of if you build it, they will come kind of thing. And there wasn't any mandatory payout or anything particularly tricky. It was just a fantastic afternoon of races. The early part of the card was tricky, and then you had a few sprinkled in, and then the latter part of the card was fairly formful. So if you made it to the end, you might have got a few bucks back if you were formful in the late pick four, pick five. But it was a good afternoon. The weather was perfect, and had a little bit of strategy involved with Safi Joseph scratching Chancet from that outside post position, which, I don't know, you think about it now, and it's easy to second guess. There's no two ways about it. On paper, the race looked like it had plenty of speed. But the way the race developed, the way it was run, Chancet would have been, I think, in a really good spot.
I agree. I agree.
Yeah, right outside of, because they would have both, the winner and Chancet both would have gone for the lead in the first turn or to get good position. And I think Chancet would have been right outside the leader because he's certainly as fast as him, I believe. And or maybe he would have been just off the leader. Anyway, he would have been in a great spot. But you don't know that going in. And Safi Joseph made, excuse me, made the, took a rough one this morning. Safi Joseph made the right move that he considered for his horse's future. And let's see if it works out.
Well, and that decision that, it seemed by, I don't know, maybe by, I was sitting here doing the, making the picks and whatnot. And let's see, Tina and I left maybe, it was like at 10:30. We had a couple of things we had to do. And so, I went out thinking that, the dust had settled and he was going to stay in. Then all of a sudden, news came that he was coming out. That, for the Tampa Bay Derby advance hooks Chancet up with Sol Volante. Spa City is going to be there, as well as Relentless Dancer, Maker's Mimosa, Let Me Know, King Guillermo, and Pletcher has got five nominated and is probably sending two. And it could, there's any possible combination, market analysis, possibility in there, and we'll look forward to Wednesday and getting a better handle on how that field comes together. But I don't think it's necessarily a tougher spot, but the issue is you had a horse that has proven himself adept over the Gulfstream Oval. You still now have to go over to Tampa, where not every horse appreciates that strip.
Yeah, you know, you have to consider all those things when you're making a decision like that. And, you know, you had a horse that's pointed for the race over a track he loves. He draws a rough post. You figured to get, I thought maybe we'd see two scratches. You saw one scratch. You know, moved him in one slot. Still a tough place to win from. But as it turned out, it looked on paper like it would have been okay. If he would have finished second, or if he'd have won the race, obviously, he would have had enough points, and all would have been good. But these are tough decisions that trainers have to make. And this is Saffy Joseph is a young guy, and he certainly has done very well with his horses, and he seems to be getting better stock every year. And you know, it's tough to get to the big dance, the Kentucky Derby. Everybody's aiming for it, and as we speak each year, it's a tough road. And as you know, I think if you have any kind of straw in your path on the way to Kentucky Derby, it makes it really hard, because the winner is usually one of the few horses that has had a perfect campaign. And doesn't mean you can't run second or third or fourth or fifth or whatever, but the winner's usually had a perfect campaign. And so when you make decisions along the way, sometimes they work out. Like, this was a case of not a health issue with the horse, but a strategic decision. And this could work out. I don't know if he's a mile and a quarter horse necessarily, but I guess we'll see as time goes by.
Well, let's talk about the ones that participated, Johnny. Some thoughts about how this race, you know, unfolded. Certainly the appropriate praise for Florent Giroux and how he, you know, how he attacked the race.
Well, you know, he's done this now. Florent yep. Giroux has been aggressive in a couple of these three-year-old races. I think three of them, if my count is correct, the last three he's ridden. And boy, it's refreshing to see a guy, you know, taking control of the race. This is something that, now look, we preface everything by saying you have to have the horse. It all starts there. But that considered, the aggressiveness, the aggressive nature of competing, you see this from Baffert time in and time out. His horses, if you have to wonder when you're looking for them, will Baffert's horse be on the lead or not? Nine times out of ten, they're going. And it's a matter of you gotta beat them, because they're gonna be in front of you and you gotta catch them and beat them. Unless the horse is obviously a confirmed closer. But in most cases, those are kind of horses, that's the way Baffert trains, that's the way they're ridden, and he gets jocks who can do that. To see a rider like Giroux, who's obviously French, to see him scooting and booting when traditionally we think of European riders as, you know, take a hold, get covered up, make one run. But he's obviously adapted to the U.S. style of horsebacking, and he's just taking control of three out of the last four Derby prep races right out of the gate. So it's also interesting that, you know, the connection that Giroux and Biancone have, both being French. I think when Giroux came to the country, Biancone helped him get situated. You know, it's interesting to see that come back. But again, it's not a wait and sit. It's a go. And you have to have a horse to do that. And there's no there's no doubt that he had the horse under him to get it done. And really, from that post position, your hand is a little bit forced. You know, you can't sit around and wait. That turn is coming up quickly. And so some jocks will hesitate and try and split the baby, try and halfway for the lead, halfway to looking to drop in. And by the time you get there, you're four or five wide, and there's nothing you can do about it. He took he took matters into his own hands, as Giroux did, with his mount at Tay in the end, and said, let's go. And they went and cleared. I mean, they cleared first turn. I thought there was some speed in the race going in, but either I was wrong or the other jocks were just either worried about getting the distance or worried about, you know, everybody looked at the same form. And sometimes everybody looks at the form, they see speed, and they decide, well, I'm going to take back a little bit in here. And before you know it, you've got three guys saying, I'm going to take back. And the only guy that goes ends up being two in front into the first turn and gliding along. That's what happened. And that's why my previous comment about where Chancey would have been in the race, that's his style, is to go. So, but as far as, you know, he took control of the race. We know he likes the track. He ran well in the Holy Bull. There's certainly, you know, gives a boost to the form of Tis the Law. I read something the other day. I don't know who said it, that their analysis of the Triple Crown of the Roads of the Kentucky Derby was, there's Tis the Law and four Baptists. I don't know if it's that exactly correct, but it was an interesting way of looking at it. So Tis the Law's form has a boost there. What they're doing with him is interesting in that they're being very selective on where they're going to run and how many races they're going to give this horse. And it's a bold move. In this day and age where we're not running quite as often, we're not running as often as we used to, this is a bold move to get a horse to Kentucky Derby to just now run him in the Holy Bull and then the Florida Derby and then the Kentucky Derby. And, of course, he had a minor hiccup with a shoe issue, forced him to miss, I think, one work or delay one work. No major thing. I think it was a hook, something. I guess he's a shoe or something. It wasn't a big deal. But again, when you are trying something daring or bold, and you think it's right, obviously they think that's the right thing for their horse. Like waiting till the Florida, they're not getting a lot of racing into a colt before you run in the Kentucky Derby. That's he's taking a risk because if something goes wrong along the way, you know now you don't have time to quite get where you want to go, and it just makes things tough. It's a very stressful situation for owners, for trainers, for the horse. They feel it, they sense it, and they're stepping up in competition. And if they don't make the step from two to three, which I don't know, that seems to be a partial or could be a partial excuse for Dennis's moment's poor performance. But he shouldn't have run as poorly as he did. You know, it wasn't his day, I guess. I don't know. As Dale said earlier, you know, sometimes you just draw a line through one and forget it. And nothing really. If he grabbed the quarter a little bit, that still doesn't explain that performance on the surface. So, you know, as Dale said, you check him out from head to toe, and then you go on with him. But he hasn't answered the question. And to my way of thinking, each year these all 2-year-olds, but the top ones especially, have to answer the question of, are you going to make the step? Can you make the step from 2 to 3? Are you going to mature? Are you going to grow? Are you going to put on weight? Are you going to learn your lessons? You know, are you going to move forward? And sometimes they don't answer those questions. And they're usually, these top 2-year-olds are usually overbet when they're making their 3-year-old debuts. Now, you might get caught sometimes where the 2-year-old does come back and duplicate, like Tis the Law did, and others. You'll get caught missing a short price favorite. But a lot of times, you know, if you're willing to draw a line through a top rank 2-year-old coming back for his first start at 3, a lot of times you're going to get, then you got to find the winner. You got to find the winner of the race, but you're going to get a price because they take so much money. And it is a big step. It's an important step. So maybe that's what happened there. The rest of the field, they finished in a clump. I don't have much comment on anyone else. I do wonder why some of these guys were so hesitant to let their horses run away from there. Some of them, maybe the horses just weren't interested in running away from there. But anyway, I don't see, as we move forward, I don't see a lot coming out of this race. The winner certainly is worth looking at. But after that, they all finished in a clump. I didn't see anything.
And it's funny because there were a couple of, there were a couple of horses that made their attempts. Paco Lopez went forward with As Seen on TV, but wasn't going to contest for the lead necessarily. Candy Tycoon, I think it shows, Johnny, sometimes you have to look, deeper than just seeing the ones, on the past performances, because it turned out he just wasn't fast enough to get involved, even though it looked on the paper like he might. He just wasn't playing fast enough. I know that Chad's horse kind of got pinched a little bit, so he wasn't as forward as he would have liked to have been. Sometimes it is just how they spill out of the gate. What was your read by the end of the day on the racetrack and how much, how much influence it had? Because it's hard to accept that the racetrack was completely quote unquote even, that horses could come from anywhere, because very few did.
Well, we've talked about this before. I know there are plenty of players who do a lot of racetrack analysis, whether the inside's better, the outside's better, the speed is better, the closes are better. I don't like to get into a lot of that. I mean, it's there. It happens. But that's not my game. And I always believe, my theory is, and it holds up pretty well, my theory is speed is always a bias. If you have speed, no matter where you are, it's a bias, because front runners win more races than closers. It's just the way it is. And if you have speed, you've already been where they've got to go. So I expect front runners to win most of the races. We had quote with Harvey Wallbanger came from off the pace. So, you had your bomb there, and you described that race accurately earlier as looking for somebody in there that you can maybe, if you didn't like the favorite, somebody could win, So he came running off the pace. I think if you're the, I often believe if you're the right horse, you can get the job done. If the pace suits you and everything's right, I think in today's track maintenance world, I don't see a lot of biases. Now, maybe it's because I'm not looking for it and that's not my game. I don't feel that way. I feel like if you're betting on a closer at Gulfstream Park, you better have a really good reason. There's got to be something, because, Gulfstream is a speed favoring track. So, we know that. Most racetracks are speed-favoring tracks. Santa Anita used to be a really speed-favoring track. If you could figure out who could get to the front or late second, you were gold. That's changed a little bit. Seems like courses labor more over this new, deeper surface. But still, the ones in front are getting tired, but the ones behind them are getting more tired. It's almost like they're trying to chase, and they get worn out chasing. So I can't say I didn't notice any really distinct bias. If a horse, and we've talked about this before, If a horse likes the surface, if he's proved that he's run well on the surface, he's gone. That's a big edge to me.
No, fair enough. And again, I wanted to get a reaction.
You mentioned, I'm thinking of his name. You mentioned the Hot Creek Hustle earlier.
Yeah.
And talked about him because he certainly was attractive there. He's got that late running style that seemed like the races were always just a little bit too short for him. A one turn mile, man, that ought to hit him right in the head. And he had run well at Churchill on the one turn mile. But the tricky thing is, and this happens, you'll see horses like this. They're late running sprinters, and they're not milers. They need that hot pace in front. They need somebody trading punches up on the lead, and they will close sprinting. And so, but going a mile, it's not as hot. The pace is not as hot. It's not, you know what I mean? And their kick is muted. So I think that's what happens with him going a mile. 7/8 hits him right between the eyes. And you hear trainers talk about, or you hear handicappers or whoever talk about distance. And they say, well, horse, he can go a mile and eight, but he can't go a mile and a quarter. Bobby Frankel told me, if they're a good horse, they can go a mile and eight, they can go a mile and a quarter. Don't worry about it. If they're a good horse. The point, I think, is that each horse has his optimum distance, his best distance. And that's kind of what we have to, as handicappers, we have to kind of dig that out. What is this horse's best distance? It doesn't mean he can't win at other distances. It just means he's the best at this. And if you look at Hot Creek Hustle's form, 7/8, boom. And, you know, I used him, obviously, because I thought, well, 7/8, he can get up, and mile's going to be even better. But I think he showed. He made the move, and he just, you know. Of course, Mr. Freeze was, you know, a tough customer, cutting back from his big try in the Pegasus.
What else were you impressed with? What else? How about the turf racing? Because there were a couple of notable efforts. I was kicking myself about Cheermeister, who I liked the last time, and you know, who I didn't discount, but I sort of didn't expect, you know, Cheermeister to get away on the front end.
Yeah, I mean, that was a tough one to find. I did not locate that one, I don't think. No, I didn't. You know, speed on the Gulfstream turf, it's really tricky. It seems like it does well. But then there's other times where there's crazy speed and guys will open up and try and steal it. That's not the kind of speed that does well. The kind of speed that does well, I think, on the Gulfstream turf course is, you know, a measured lead where you're just kind of throwing those 24s and you're just, you know, you're getting the coast along and then you've got enough to kind of keep going away from the closers. But this was, I think it was kind of an open race. I mean, it's another case where, excuse me, you look at a race and you say, wow, there's a bunch in here. You know, I don't really love anyone. There are a bunch of maybes in here. And so you got to come up with the right maybe. And and when you look back, you say, hey, this is a grade three turf winner back in a grade three turf race, you know, less than a month later. What's not to like? It's like, how did this horse make 20/60? But again, you think there's more speed in them than there is. You misjudge the amount of speed, or maybe everybody else misjudges the amount of speed, and you end up with you know, a winner at 2060.
Yeah. Yep. And actually, you know, the fact that Silver Kitten had to be overhauled late by Get Mother a Rose in the Honey Fox. But otherwise, yeah, just looking at, yeah, that's a race that had a hot pace. The Canadian went 21-4, if these are right, 44-1, 108-1. And all you got to do is look down and see that, you know, the majority of those that stayed close, other than Sambaye, who sat fourth and third after a quarter and a half. But English B came running to be second. Hey Dakota and Louder Than Bombs were well back as well. But Pletcher's done a nice job refashioning Sambaye into a turf horse.
He's been solid. He's been solid on the turf.
He was a precocious 2-year-old that won at 4.5, and now has come back starting at Saratoga last summer with the quick call. Then he was second in the Hall of Fame, now he's a graded stake winner on the grass going a mile. So it's obvious what Jack Wolf and Todd have in mind for somebody.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see Flavian Pratt. I think he wrote a couple for Pletcher. But it's interesting to see him continue his good riding when he ships out of town.
No. I actually was kind of keeping track of him, and I was... And I, to some degree, I'm not going to say I wasn't disappointed, but I was expecting, you know, a kind of a splash from Pratt.
Well, Dennis Bowman was a big splash, but in the wrong direction.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Silver Kittens.
I can't say that was trainer error or jockey error. I'm going to blame that one on the horse.
Yeah, great. Now, he was fourth in the maiden race with Bobby Flay's horse, that Fried Rice King, who might be okay. Capta Cruz was in the very one. I was trying to make a case at a price for Capta Cruz, and that did not come off with Pratt. But actually, he had an okay. Yeah, he had an okay day. Johnny, let's, because it's going to end up getting late here. We got a couple of things we've got to do. I want to look at the. I was saving the results from Friday and the Stronach 5 carryover. I wanted to go over that with you, and then we've got to talk about the regular season coming to a close in Beat the Host.
Yeah, well, the carryover of Stronach 5, I mean, that wager has really kind of found a scene now. I mean, it's popular. It's people look forward to it, and when they can get a carryover, you know, you get decent payouts. It wasn't that hard. I think it paid $1,400. It wasn't terribly hard. It was fairly formful. I didn't hit it, but I could have, but I didn't. The Golden Hour double certainly should be noted. What Santa Anita has and Golden Gate. Combined the last race at Santa Anita with the last race at Golden Gate, a $5 double. And the first, I think the first pool was like 100,000. The second pool was like 120,000. That's going to become a popular wager. But it's got a small takeout, I think 12% maybe. That's going to be a popular wager. And it's going to be the pioneer for a return to higher minimum
increments.
Wagers.
Yep.
And players have been talking about this for years, and I think someone got to someone who listened, and they took a shot with this, which is a well-constructed way to introduce the $5 double. And the payoffs are, from what I've seen, they're great. And I think if that extends to, you know, you've got something like the Stronach 5 that you look at, which is a dollar, and the payoffs there are solid. So maybe this is a step in the direction of trying other wagers that are higher minimums and see how they handle, see how they do. I think this is a good step. So I thought that was notable.
No, very much so, and I'm glad you brought it up. I mentioned it in passing last week, and I had reached out to Paul Matisse to have a conversation about it, and because Paul is the guy that, you know, first started to bring up this concept in discussions that the Players Committee with the Breeders' Cup, in association with Breeders' Cup, has been having. And I suppose Tim Schramm and everybody that is involved in the betting menu for Breeders' Cup. And we'll get, hopefully this week, actually, we'll get a discussion going about the strategy involved and the concept. I understand that Keeneland is considering one for April and very well may hear about that in coming weeks. I would think sooner than later, with the meet really not far off now. But apparently they're looking at a higher denomination. Maybe John Goodman can give us a report when the time comes. But you're right, Johnny. This has been kicked around, and I'm pretty sure, the first person to bring it up publicly has been Paul Matisse. This all gets back to Steve Crist and, you know, his drum banging that the only way to innovate and to bring in, essentially to try to add new handle is to innovate with new bets, innovation on the betting menu. And that continues to be true. I mean, all you got to do is look at what the Pick 5 has done, the 50-cent Pick 5 the industry really co-opted into a lower takeout format, which meets a need as well. So there's some interesting dynamics involved here.
Agreed. You know, we said goodbye to Beat the Host this week. The weekly Beat the Host is gone. I know you've listened to Steve and I discuss this week after week. This week's winner, Nelson Jaramillo, $191.50. He got the $1,000 prize. Second, Marty Scaminacci, $184.50. Jimmy O'Neill and John Lafferty, they tied for third, $180 in total, so they got $125 each. That closes the book on the weekly competitions. Hats off to Marianito Mendoza. Top weekly performance, $219 in that performance. Bruce Barton, close behind, $217 at the weekly total. And hats off, maybe an MVP award, to Kevin McFarland, who won two weekly prizes during the season. 11th of January for $138.50, and then the 1st of February, $200.50. fabulous, fabulous accomplishment. Seldom do we see players winning more than one prize at any level. Let alone two top prizes. For example, this year we had 48 different prize winners, which is great. I love when the money's spread around, the prize money spread around. We had one top four finisher, I'll discuss that in a second, but 48 different prize winners throughout the season. I think that's great. I love it when it's spread out. Of course, the competition races for Saturday. Our man Eddie Olczyk had a rough day. He was unable to shake the collar. It was a valiant effort, but he came up short. And so the perfect score would have been 338. And the winner had, as I mentioned, 191. So we didn't lose any of the sweep to those people. 17 winners of Sweep the Host for 176.47 each. Congratulations to those 17 Sweep the Host winners. You know, seeing that sent me back to look at past years, because you and I talked about this before. You know, last year we had 44 Sweep the Host winners. The year before that we had 23. And in this was actually the 14th year for Beat the Host, which I find incredible. It's amazing that it's been 14 years. But so those 3 years I just mentioned, 17, 44, 23, before that, we had 4 years with no Sweep the Host winners, 1 year with three, 2 years with two, 1 year with four, and 1 year with seven, 1 year with one. In other words, these last 3 years have been the host is getting swept on a regular basis, 23-44-17. I don't know why. I'm going to dig a little deeper and try and figure out why that's happened. I don't know if the players are getting sharper or the hosts are getting duller. I have to figure that one out. Now, the cumulative competition for this year. First year we had it, and the winner, Jason Wesley. And I understand Jason was named after Jason and the Argonauts. Jason's mother, like Jason of the and the Argonauts, and names Jason, Jason. But it's not a male, it's a female.
That's Joe McKay's wife.
Joe McKay's wife. And she's right? Not Jason McKay. She's Jason Wesley. And,
how funny. How did that happen?
Well, she was seventh going into this.
Yeah.
Year. She threw up a $179 week.
Wow.
Which is a powerful week. And moved from seventh to take down the $5,000 prize for winning the Beat the Host cumulative competition. She never won a weekly prize throughout the whole season, which is kind of crazy about this yearly competition. But she averaged $75.50. That was her average for the 9 weeks of the season. And just kind of grinded along. And like I said, it was in seventh place. Now, you need a combination of things to happen. You need to have a great day. And you need to have the guys in front of you stumble a bit. And that's kind of what happened. Stephen Jones, who was the leader heading into the final week at 605.50, he checked in at 605.50. He must have been playing Eddie's picks because he took the collar too. Now, here's a guy you know is a good player. He had a bad week. He averaged $67.72, and he never won a weekly prize. So you've got the top two finishers never won a weekly prize the whole season. I think that's a statement to how consistent you have to be. Stephen Jones gets $2,500 for finishing second. Stephen Stang was in third. Going in, and he stayed third. He had $51.50 in weekly earnings. John Moravec moved up from 16th with $128.50. He had a strong week. Moved up from 16th. He didn't win a weekly prize. Stephen Stang won a third-place prize on February 1st. So you've got, and Stephen Stang is $1,500. John Moravec gets $1,000. For finishing fourth. You've got three of the top four players never won anything in weekly prize, and one of them finished third once in the whole season. So it just shows you where if you just keep showing up and you keep playing, and you're going to have your big weeks, you're going to have your off weeks, and that's kind of the way this game is for everybody.
Sure.
For the top players in the world, it's the way this game is. You just got to keep showing up and keep grinding out, and that's how Jason Wesley got all the money. And Joe McKay said that their first date, I believe, was at Laurel. I think I have that right. And his wife hit a $600 pick three, I think he said. So she's a player. She's a player. She knows what she's doing. And congratulations to her. And congratulations to everyone who's played Beat the Host this year. We've got the championship coming up this weekend, this Saturday. And if you beat the host once this year, you're in the championship. And it's basically a free roll. We've got $10,000 in prizes. You're going to make a $5 win wager on one horse in each of 10 races, just like we did every week of Beat the Host. And let's see what happens. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, and it's also a big contest week too with Santa Anita, right? We've got the challenge. Which one is this? Saturday?
This weekend or
no? I think it's this weekend. No, it's this weekend. I think unless this weekend is a.
They got another big one coming up. Maybe next weekend. I'm not sure. This weekend's the Big Cat. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. With and the San Felipe, and it's got a name though. I'm drawing a blank on the name, but we'll get to it. Yeah, exactly. Johnny, well
Stevie.
Done, and congratulations. Okay. How many qualifiers, by the way, for the championship?
Only 976.
976. Well, that's a good number.
It is a good number. It's a big number. But, you've been playing Beat the Host all year, and you beat the host once, you get in. So the barrier to entry is not real high. But it's going to be fun.
Well, and you know, 5,000 to the winner, 2,500, 1,500, and 1,000 top four finishers, how many get into the with 30, right? Top 30 get into showdown.
The top 30 finishers get into showdown, and that's a $200 entry fee this year. So it's like winning 200 if you finish in the top 30, and,
nice.
And you get a shot at. The showdown is $30,000 in prizes, $10,000 to the winner, $6,000 second, four to third, three to fourth, and two to fifth. So you want to get in the showdown. You want to finish in the top 30 of this championship. And then, of course, we have Express Bet Live coming up in a few weeks. And that one, you want to finish in the top 30 there because those 60 players have moved forward to a showdown. And then other players will be able to buy into showdown for $200 each. So it's 10,000 to winner. That's a real good prize.
Absolutely. And Johnny, before we go, your thoughts about Maximum Security and also fines, the fines that were levied.
Yeah, well, okay. So in case anybody didn't know it, Maximum Security is a really good horse. I mean, we've been saying this before the Derby, that disqualification, I still haven't recovered from that as far as financial. It cost me a lot. But I knew he was a good horse going in, coming out. He hasn't done it. He had an unlucky year which is why I didn't think he should be Horse of the Year. He didn't show up in some of the big races, mostly not his fault. One thing or another led to him missing the major races throughout the year, major three-year-old races, and then also the Breeders' Cup. So he didn't get to prove, but certainly when he came back, when he did run, he made statements each time. So, you know, he's a really good one. And that he could win, that he showed the determination, that he showed Saturday in the face of, he knows a thing about or two about swerving around in the stretch. And it seems that this time he's on the other end of it. But that's what the best horse does. The best horse overcomes everything, gets the job done, and I hear the word is he's not going to go to Dubai.
No.
This race probably gutted him because he ran as hard as he could run. And that's what a really good horse does. Now, you know he's really good because down on the inside, Midnight Bisou and Mike Smith, they were moving. They were moving at the end, at the finish, and the result of some of that, Mike Smith getting a ban of, I don't know, 8 or 9 days for his excessive use of the whip, or at least in violation of the rules in that jurisdiction. Well, a couple questions. First of all, did he know the rules?
Yeah, they went over. They went over. They went up pre-race. Everybody was advised on that front.
Right. And the riders know now, no matter where you're riding, you know that's a point of emphasis. To borrow an NFL phrase, an NFL officiating phrase, it's a point of emphasis. And so why did Mike do it? Well, he was trying to win a $20 million race. That's why he did it. Did he abuse Midnight Beast? No. And no one's alleging that. It's just that the rules are you're only allowed to hit a certain number of times and you have to wait for a horse to respond. And, I'm trying to remember the story of who won the Derby. Oh, Victor Espinosa. Was it, American Pharoah? Maybe, I think it was American Pharoah when he won the Derby. And Victor hit him quite a few times in the stretch. So I had a chance to talk to Ramon Dominguez at the Preakness following that race. I said, Ramon, did you think Victor, really got after the horse? And he said, well, John, I'll tell you something. If I'm in the Kentucky Derby and I got a chance to win and I hit my horse and he responds, there's a good chance I'm going to hit him again.
Well, Ramon was...
Yeah, he was not shy. He was not
no,
shy.
No.
But into my point being that if Mike Smith, who's as intelligent, as smart, as crafty, as experienced, as great a rider as there is today, if she's running from it, if she's responding to it, he's going to do it because it's a $20 million purse. And okay, so you get some days and, we got to figure out now, can he ride these designated races at Santa Anita? Santa Anita is going to honor. I read somewhere somebody said something like, some jurisdictions should not honor the ban. I don't know why you wouldn't honor it. It's the rules are the rules. You want them to follow honor your infraction, your ruling. Why wouldn't you follow theirs? So, I think he's going to get the ride in designated races. I don't know. I don't know how it's all going to sort out. Did he deserve it? He broke the rules. Yes, he deserved it. Did he abuse the mare, the filly? No, he didn't. He didn't abuse her. But he was trying to win a $20 million race, so he did what he could and has to pay the penalty. He knew it. He's he knew what he was doing. Lots of times you'll see at the end of a race, particularly a big race with a big purse, you'll see a jock just let his horse drift out and come bother a closer. Just enough to hopefully hang on. And you know what? Basically, he's saying, look, that horse is going to go by me. I'm going to keep him back and let the stewards take me down. Put the pressure on them. I'm going to win the race first and let them take me down. So if Mike was going to get the job done, thought he was going to get the job done, fine. You guys go ahead and find me. Well, I guess it cost him
$210,000,
maybe.
$210,000.
Yeah, $210,000 plus the days. Well, if you can ride in the stakes races, that's not going to bother Mike Smith too much. 8 days, they only race 3 days a week in California, so I don't know. I don't know how they're going to sort all that out, but I know why he did it. I know he deserved to be punished, but he was doing it to win, and he did not abuse the mayor. That was not abuse of the whip. Look,
I get it. What about Errat Ortiz? I mean, that display it was, you know, for those that watch the herding that goes on here, you know, that stewards seem to just yawn over. I mean, that was just ridiculous.
It's kind of the situation I was just alluding to.
Yeah.
Where your horse is tired. They can feel their horse slowing down, getting tired. They can hear their breathing. They can feel them. And so here comes the favorite, the best horse, one of the best horses in the world. And what are you going to do? So he took a shot. He moved out, make him duck inside, and moved into. It's race riding. It was interesting to me, looking at it again and again, if he'd have won, would I have taken him down? And when he first came out, I think he was clear. In other words, yes, it's hurting, but within the rules, it's legal hurting. He's clear, and he can come, he can change course if he needs to, if he wants to, if he's clear. And then when he went back inside again, I had to laugh because, well, okay, now maybe you're just, you're going after somebody. But then he stopped short of making contact and straightened up and straightened his horse up. He knew he was beat at that point. So he just straightened him up. And I would not give him days for that. Didn't cost anyone a position. Was it right on the line? Yeah. But I let it go. I'm more of a let the guys settle it kind of official.
Well, yeah, because you're a jock agent by nature, and you don't want it taken out of your pocket. Who's kidding who?
I would have left the horse up in the Derby. I would have left maximum security up in the Derby. So that's how laissez-faire I am.
Well, and of course on that topic, you talk about what jocks, what the jocks being conscious enough to do what's necessary at the moment while trying to walk that line. And, of course, the same thing is true for Flavian Pratt, going to the outrider and asking for an objection. He figured, what's the worst that's happened? I get fined for a frivolous, claim. And instead, it ends up, going in his favor in the biggest way possible. So it's fascinating, and I see that I'm hearing from Tony Black. And so Tony's got thoughts on this topic himself. But Johnny, I love it.
I appreciate it. They should have taken him down. They don't need to leave extra stamp for that.
No. I think you went the wrong direction. Tony,
okay, good.
Leave it alone.
Good. If I'm in Tony Black camp, I'm doing okay.
That's right. Well, and we're looking forward to talking to Tony, too, because yesterday we ran against Collegeville Girl, and Tony's favorite filly that he exercises. She was unbelievable yesterday, clearing her New York bred first level allowance condition. 84 buyer, by far, I mean, career best. She just blew the race apart. And congratulations to Richie Vega and everybody that's involved there. And, you know, Tony still gets on her. And Sal DeBunda, part of that ownership group, and a Parks-based, another Parks-based winner.
Sal lives in my development, strangely enough.
Is that right? Sal does?
Yeah. I know we're about to close up here, and maybe we'll pick this. You let me know how much time we have, because we'll pick up on this later if you want, but I thought it was kind of interesting. We had two, in the last week or so, week and a half, 2 weeks, we had two large Rainbow Six payoffs at Gulfstream Park that were purchased through ExpressBet. And we've seen some information on the one.
Oh, cool.
But I've got the breakdown on the tickets, you know, how these tickets were constructed. And they're kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum. One was $51.20. That's what the ticket cost. And the other ticket cost $2,304. So they're at opposite ends of the spectrum. Different ways of attacking it, but I don't know if we have time now or we'll do it another time.
Let's save that if we could. I still got to get to Tommy Bush and more. All right.
Okay. You got it. Stevie, take care of yourself.
You too. Johnny D, everybody. XB Johnny D. With a very full visit, and I knew it would be because we had wanted, and we really didn't even dive into the results, the specific results from the Stronach 5, but trimmed in gray, who was sort of the I used fourth, and it was a B for me. American Ninja was $14. Trimmed in gray at Laurel, $8.40. American Ninja was $14. I had to improve, I thought, to win that race at Gulfstream, and I did not. I preferred others, as they say. At Golden Gate, that Mr. McLean did go ahead and wire the field. And the funny thing about that race was that the turnback candidate, That's a Bad Boy, that we had discussed, ended up taking a lot of money and ended up going favored. So, I mean, if you were betting the race from a standalone standpoint, you know, you might have gone back to Mr. McLean, but he really confidently handled by Alvarado and really was never in doubt. Same thing with Malibu Cat, who we did like, and Malibu Cat was terrific, winning the maiden race at Santa Anita. And then Mrs. Weber's Super Courage with Trombetta wins the fifth leg and paid $10.20. So $8.40, $14, $6.20, $5.60, and $10.20. It wasn't like there was outlandish, you know, horses involved here. And the payout was $14.07, which was above the parlay, but not a lot. And but it was, you know, it was a ticket, really kind of a ticket building exercise race. To some degree, I thought, I mean, not that they all aren't, these multis, but this one was strictly what you needed, you know, what did you need to spend to win 1400? I mean, is the question on the Stronach from Friday. We got Tommy Bush coming up next, and I should slip in, too, you know, in those discussions about Florent Giroux and his recent tactics. Of course, 2 weeks ago in New Orleans, the Risen Star win on Mr. Monomoy. Mr. Monomoy is hurt, and he's going to be sidelined just enough. It's not a big deal, but it just enough of an issue to keep him out of Derby. So feel badly for everybody involved, but Mr. Monomoy sidelined. Let's take a break. Tom Bush going to join us. Get Mother a Rose. And boy, Get Stormy, that was fashioned by Mrs. Sullivan and Tom. The gift that keeps on giving, because here's a daughter of Get Stormy. And we'll talk to Tom about a career best effort from her winning the Honey Fox. More to come. Got about 40 minutes and a couple of trainer conversations yet to enjoy. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
At the track or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's B-Y-K, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K to get your $125 bonus. Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'm coming back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.